Chapter 14. Greetings again, brother. As I have seen your light flashing in my mind, I know that we are again in contact. Yes, indeed, you are right, and I am glad that it is so, that you are beginning to see much more clearly, and especially my people. I was with you when you were peeking in one of the doorways a short while ago, and I believe that you are partially conscious of what was going on, as well as seeing those who were participating. This is the room, and you were attracted to it, I believe, by the soft blue radiance with which it seems to be filled. I notice also that you are seeing a number of my fellow Venusians who are seated around the room in meditative positions. You are also beginning to see my brothers as they really are, that they are appearing to you not like yourself with two arms and two legs, neither are they two-headed monsters with many arms and legs, nor are they like anything else which may have been depicted in some Earthman's imagination. Instead, you see them as beautiful glowing bodies of light which seem to be pulsating and throbbing, and there are different colors and quantities of radiation or light which seem to come from different places. When your sense of relationship is fully developed so that you form a true perspective of what you call form, shape, size, or density, in our dimensions, you will see that we will in consequence assume a proper relationship like in your Earth world. In other words, the appearance of our bodies may startle or shock many Earthians if they were to see us so, because of their firmly interwoven thought patterns and relationships conceived in their world. Actually, the many radiant portions and color spectrums which seem to come from different sections of our bodies relate, in their proper proportion, to their own senses or functions in our dimension or world as your various organs function for you in your Earth body. Thus you might say, we do have organs, but they are radiant energy sources. A few of your Earth people have a partial knowledge of this, as they often refer to them by the word chakra, I believe, centers of radiation which stem into the physical body from the psychic. However, getting back to the subject at hand, which is this particular room, these brothers and sisters of mine happen to be engaged in the concerted effort of sending forth healing rays into a certain ward in one of your Earth hospitals which is filled to overflowing with small children who have been stricken with that disease of ignorance, which the Earth doctor calls polio. It is through the united efforts of these brothers and sisters that we will help many of these children to walk again. Likewise will the moments of fearful torture which is ahead of each of them be lessened by such healing ray projection. I see that a thought has crossed your mind, inasmuch as this room was in a particular way just a little auto-suggestive of some of the seance rooms which you have entered in your Earth life. It is fortunate that your own spiritual forces were sufficiently directed to steer you away from these practices. While I do not like to reflect criticism or appear jurisdictional, it can be truly said that such misuse and misunderstanding of man's psychic self is malpractice. It is pitiful to see thousands of fine, wonderful people depend on almost daily communication, through some medium, with their loved ones who have passed on. These are like small doses of some sedative, inasmuch as the individual becomes dependent upon the medium and cannot, and does not, face a more realistic position in their personal philosophy. It is a sign of weakness and lack of spiritual concept which causes a person to seek out such means of communion. The dangers and damaging results are increased a hundredfold when other phases, such as materializations, are entered into. Sitting about in a closed and darkened room, a person will, in his extreme anxiety, create such strong thought patterns of energy that he can be collected and entered into by cunning, conniving astral forces. There are very few people on your Earth plane who have the absolute ability of distinguishing such subterfuges. Many times will these astral forces not only use the thought energies in the assumed form and shape and identities of Earth people who have passed on, but will often, in the case of stronger and more advanced entities, actually pose as masters. May I say to you and to all of the people of the Earth, that no master has ever appeared at any seance, nor will he ever do so. The reasons are quite clear and obvious. In an abstract sense, a master does not need to appear to any person or persons for the purpose of impressing them in some way to live a better life. He does not need to do so. Masters would project through the inner person's consciousness. However, I believe the term master has been rather loosely applied. In my understanding of mastership, a master is a master when he is helping to direct and to teach large groups of individuals, each one of whom you might call a master. In other words, you may have referred to us as masters, yet we are humbly observant of much greater intellects who are helping to guide our destinies. Let not the word master confuse you. The word itself relates or is suggestive of some form of chained bondage. There is no chained bondage in our spiritual worlds. Attaining the proper balance and perspective of the relationships of the many planes results in a vast and integrated participating membership in which each individual is an active participant that rightly enjoys the fullest measure of spiritual companionship. Getting back to the seance room, let us say in conclusion that with them this is a cycle in their understanding, and to all those who participate in this philosophy, that inasmuch as it has been formed out of the fear of death, so will it pass from them. Being born into new spiritual realms and concepts, you will lose this fear and insecurity, and you will learn the true relationship and use of your psychic consciousness. I might add also that great harm is often incurred by the spirit entities which are so contacted. It is something like some great hand picking you up and setting you down in some far-off place where you had at one time suffered great fear and anguish. It is quite serious for many people who are newly born in some spiritual realm and are just beginning to, shall I say, walk, to be again confronted with some tearful friend or relative who, in their fears and insecurities, have sought them out. A true spiritual philosophy and practice of such contacts involves many factors of which you are not aware, as you do not have the proper sense of values and the relationship of the many astral worlds in which the newly born souls arrive. It is best, therefore, to adopt a more natural philosophical consciousness. We must know first, and it has been repeated countless times, that death is a word which means change, and that your loved ones and friends do live, just as you will, until and beyond the place and time you call eternity. Yes, brothers and sisters of the earth planes, you indulge yourselves in many interpretations of what you call spiritual philosophy. There are some who are attempting to teach others a perfect way of life, and yet they themselves are no less fearful than their fellow men, and their very teachings come not from the high places nor from the word of God whom they profess to serve, but they speak and read from books the words of other men no less fearful. There are altars of worship where they teach that the mere belief in God and Avatar Christ means absolvence from their self-imposed sense of guilt. Let me say, friends, that the absolvence of sin and error comes only from within yourself, and that you have used a destructive way. Your word repentance means this acknowledgement, and your salvation from this sin comes not from the priest of the temple but in the lesson you have learned and from your firm resolution to do better. You must know that this life of yours is contrived and fabricated of countless dimensions and evolutions, and that each succeeding lifetime is so woven and fabricated that it becomes your spiritual cloak, and within its radiant folds you will consummate a lifetime, yet, an eternity of service to your God through your fellow men. Look upward, my friends, always look upward, always live in the consciousness of continuity and acknowledgement of the cosmic fountainhead. See his waters flowing into you as these waters in turn flow outward into all things that you do. Chapter 15. In our last visit I made some rather strong statements. Since that time, I have been conscious of some chattering between you. I realize therefore that my statements could also cause even more chattering should they reach the eyes and ears of those more directly affected. I will not try to modify any of my statements. Be kind enough to me, however, to realize that I am trying to bring you an impartial viewpoint from a higher dimension, and one which is based on much experience and fact. So I will repeat that no master has ever appeared or materialized in a seance room. If by chance you know of some instance in which a master supposedly made an appearance, I would severely question the position of both the medium and the entity or apparition. Now I do not infer that masters do not appear. Likewise, I place great value and emphasis on the correct use and understanding of psychic powers within their proper domain. There have been several masters who have lived on your earth in physical form. I need not mention that the one called Christ is the most outstanding example. Masters have also appeared in different ways and in some clairvoyant fashion, to some of the more highly evolved souls who have lived, or are living on your planet. In the Bible there are numerous cases. A master appeared to one called Moses and he wrote the Ten Commandments, out of which grew one of the oldest and strongest religions of your earth. After the crucifixion, the Master Christ appeared to Saul, or Paul, who founded a church, which later through a schism, became known as the Greek Orthodox and the Roman Catholic Churches. A master named Zoroaster also founded a pure monotheistic belief. A boy named Joseph Smith saw a master and under his guidance founded what is today a very powerful church in your America. I could go on and on. Yes, I could even remind you of your own partial transfiguration, when the prophet Elisha, who is a master, appeared to you, with a host of angels. Needless to say, such psychic happenings to any individual personalities have a great and powerful influence which is usually marked by the appearance of some spiritual movement. Masters do not run around and appear at some person's whim or will in some small confined séance room. Theirs is a highly conceived way of life. Any movements and appearances which they make in earth plane existences are always premeditated, carefully planned movements which have had thousands of years planning in their making. There is of course some conjecture as to what an earth man may call a master. It is usually safe to say, however, that they do not assume a strong personal attitude. They do not go about proclaiming loudly that they are so and so. If you remember in your experience that although Elisha spoke to you, he did not call himself by name. You, however, knew instantly who he was. I could spend much time in discussing the innumerable facets relating to darkroom seances. There are very few mediums in your world today who can continue in any prolonged seance work without suffering some very serious physical or psychic damage. It is not a natural state for any earthman to discontinue, even temporarily, the use of his body. Even the most careful automobile drivers have accidents. Such accidents do happen to those who engage in conscious suspension, no matter how strongly fortified his protective forces may be. There is a much wiser and safer, and more natural type of mediumship, something which you call mental mediumship. Here the medium always assumes complete conscious control. There is less chance of a cleverly disguised entity gaining control. It should be borne in mind, however, that, like everything else, mediumship should be gone into gradually. It should not be assumed in one lifetime but in a number of lifetimes. It must have a preconceived purpose, which will result in thousands of years of training until it culminates as a useful science on the physical plane. Such mediumship is often expressed in many ways. A medium may thus be a doctor, or an artist or a clergyman, or she may be a nurse, such as Sister Kenny. Your own mind will recall 100 or so such mediums. Is it not better to see the infinity of God expressed in a beautiful and practical relationship rather than hearing a few weak voices from some unadjusted souls who have passed on into astral worlds? You may also question the validity of much of the material or teachings which may come from those you supposed to be higher forces. As I have said, the earth man has no criteria whereby he can distinguish to an absolute degree the authenticity of the identity of some entity who has entered a séance room. Many of the higher astral forces have comparatively great spiritual strength and understanding, comparatively, I say, to your earth plane, and consequently can reflect many wonderful and beautiful truths, but like the lower orders of Venusians who have gone astray in their overzealous efforts, they too must find, referring to the astral forces, that the darkened room is not the proper outlet for any philosophy which might appeal to the great masses who may be in dire need of such truths. I have taken up enough time in this discourse, in fact I feel quite selfish, that my entire series of transmissions were so occupied, and to such an extent. However, as you have surmised, besides permitting you to expand your own consciousness, which must be done slowly, our exploration of Venus and our cities has a twofold purpose. You could not appreciate or understand our way of life without the proper mental foundation. You will be in a better position to understand many new and even greater truths which may come to you in future evolutions. For the moment, however, let us relax and stroll down the hall and enter some other room which may contain some great mystery. Here at the end of the hall is a doorway which leads into a nursery. You are wondering when I say nursery, inasmuch as I have said we do not have children. In this room, as you look about you, you will see large numbers of beautiful little bassinets which contain, shall I say, spiritual embryos. These are actually tiny psychic bodies or soul forms of infants waiting to enter a mother's womb on some earth at the moment of conception. Here you will see nurses, if you liken them to such, moving about and caring for, in various ways, these embryo souls. While I use the word embryo, each one of the tiny glowing forms which you see on these silken pads is actually, in some cases, a comparatively old soul. Many of those here in the room have already been through several births and several deaths. They are, as far as this room is concerned, however, people who have met with a sudden death or have committed suicide. It is one of our purposes and functions here on this planet to rebuild and reconstitute such violently dissipated causations, as in such cases there is a distinct damaging effect to the psychic body. You may also wonder that the entire personal identity of a human being could be contained in such small specks of light, but here again I must remind you of the word concept, and the factor of the relativity of space. While in a normal sense a person who has not suffered a serious catastrophe usually evolves into a new cycle of earth life with a complete psychic substructure, this being the composite amalgamation of wave forms which relate to his previous spiritual and physical evolution. However, the tiny discarnate psychic body which you see before you, is all that is left after the needed corrective therapy has been applied. Do not, however, confuse this psychic body with the superconscious of the individual. The real superconscious of any individual resides in another dimension as an integrated factor with the cosmic fountainhead. The psychic body which you see is actually only something like a link in a chain which connects the physical individual with the fountainhead. When you become acquainted with the true factors and ramifications which enter into understanding what I have just told you, it will be quite easy for you to figure out for yourself just what position any particular individual is in at that particular moment of retrospection. In other words, this knowledge will advance you, in some respects, to a point which is comparable to something like an adept. I might caution you, however, and all who read these lines, that the greatest respect and reverence for, as well as an extremely careful usage of this knowledge, is imperative. I have long considered the advisability of giving this knowledge, in the written word, to the earth peoples, with the advice of not only my fellow Venusians but of those from the upper realms as well. I have decided to do so with two provisions. First, that certain ultimate secrets shall not be given to you at this time. I am referring to the direct knowledge which would enable you to change your frequency relationship. I have also enlisted the aid of some vast astral agencies which will do much to correct any misusage which might arise if certain persons who read this book would use it for their own ends, neither shall it be scoffed at or derided. May I say that any person who does so, laughs at God and at all of the creative principles of heaven and earth. I have shown you this nursery because I wish to implant it in the conscious minds of the future Earth scientists who engage in corrective therapies which involve the human mind. After reading the truths which are contained in this written work, they will better understand in the treatment of some unfortunate misalignment that the patient can and often does incur his greatest distresses from some great negation in some previous life. We here on Venus do not have the power to remove these conditions, as this kind of therapy must occur only in a certain relationship and at a time when the physical, psychic, and the superconscious are united in an individual, and with the individual's full cooperation. I feel that you will agree with me when I say that you have just received a very astounding revelation. Until next time. Malvar. Chapter 16. A pleasant day to you, brother and sister. Because of the length of our previous transcription, I was forced to terminate our contact before the subject of suicide had been adequately covered. Because of the seriousness of this subject, and the large numbers of people who so terminate their lives, I believe it is well worth some additional time, using statistics which are currently available. It is said that in your America in the last year about 19,000 persons voluntarily concluded their own lives, more than 100,000 additional persons attempted self-conclusion, in which fortunately for them, they were not successful. Many of these, however, well make future attempts as they were turned back into society without proper corrective therapy. Many of these self-conclusions were small children, young boys, and girls. The cause which induced their willful action was extreme hatred, frustration, and anger, against the whole world and particularly toward their parents, who in their tyrannical dispositions induced these strong emotional strains which caused the anger and hatred. It is no joking matter if I remind you of a popular song, which was built around the theme of a young girl who, having such feelings of anger and self-pity, threatened self-conclusion by eating worms. And while this song may have been invented for purposes of amusement, yet it can truly be said, it was inspired from fact. Most adults can remember that as youngsters at some time they thought of retaliation against their parents or others by self-conclusion. As children or adults, there are also numerous other causes for this action. A person may feel a tremendous loss at losing his position, or she may have lost her husband, or there may be an incurable illness, or perhaps some form of lethargic neurasthenia which has been induced by the treadmill-like existence of your civilized way of life. But whatever the causes, as they may appear on the surface, these can all be lumped together and called by one name, negation. Negation is also the primary cause and largest contributing factor in causing all the illnesses of mankind, and I make no exceptions. I believe that this statement will be verified to a large degree by most of your competent doctors. Negation simply means a sort of pinching off process, or a misalignment of the vital life energies, which flow into the mind and body through the psychic body and which come from the soul or superconscious, which is directly linked to the fountainhead. You may think that the air you breathe, and the food you consume, gives you this energy. But this energy could not be assimilated or converted without the dynamic, intelligent life energy which flows at all times from the superconscious. If you will mull this over for a while in your minds, you will see the infinite number of possibilities and the many ramifications which are involved in this gradual pinching off, misaligning process which is induced by negation. The act of terminating one's own life has very serious consequences, inasmuch as when the act is performed there is an almost total separation from the life-giving superconscious, leaving the inert physical body behind. The discarnate entity quickly drifts off into some low astral realm. His thought body, which is composed of the reflected energies of his self-idea or ego, are quickly dissipated. Likewise, much of the adhesive continuity qualities which hold the astral body together, as well as the alignment with the superconscious. We often find these bits of human wreckage floating half-suspended in some darkened region. They are usually without form or intelligence and are quite difficult to handle as they may break apart very easily. The earth term of bringing someone home in a sheet after a serious accident might be applied to these cases. Very often we bring these suicides back with us in an energy envelope or shroud, or they may be brought to us for treatment. Many of these cases are treated not only here on Venus but on other planets, or in other realms or dimensions which may be more suitable for certain cases which require special therapy. As you noticed last night as we were standing in the very large room which I called a nursery, the entire room was filled with a brilliant yellow radiance. No doubt you know that the colors you see are indicative of the purpose for which the room is being used. In the blue or purplish room there were healing projections being sent out, in which case the therapy used was in the ultraviolet portion of the spectrum and related more strongly to physical conditions pertaining to nerve breakdowns, such as in polio. In our nursery, however, the radiance here is of a more spiritual nature, and is being used in correcting and rebuilding badly damaged psychic bodies. As you see, each one of these is contained in a circular vessel constructed of crystal which I called, for want of a better name, bassinets. These vessels are all standing in regular rows upon crystal pedestals. Each vessel is partly filled with a soft energy mass, something like the ectoplasm which is produced in psychic trances in seance rooms. It was this soft white radiant energy which you at first thought to be silk. Now if you will step closer to one of these vessels and look within, you will see a small densely grouped cluster of gem-like bits of light, which seem to twinkle like tiny stars. If you had the proper power of conception you would see that, like the more familiar earth atoms, these are all conglomerate masses or structures of tiny waveforms of intelligent energies. Each waveform, and its associated waveforms, carry an experience or a series of such experiences from the earth life of the individual. The body at which you are looking happens to be that of a 17-year-old girl who took her life about 500 years ago. She is waiting until a suitable opportunity and for the correct time, which will be about 100 years from now, when she will again be born into an earth life existence. I might say, however, that in any individual evolution, there are certain regularly spaced intervals between each incarnation, which are determined by a certain law of harmonic vibrations. When a suicide is reborn into the earth plane and again assumes the physical form, he will still be suffering from the effects of his previous self-destruction. It may take several earth lives before the full effects have been dissipated, and the psychic body has been rebuilt to its full strength. Looking again at the young lady before you in your consciousness, you do not see the silver thread which stems up into the room above you. This is something like what you might call a spiritual umbilical cord. Somewhere up in the room above, it branches off into many little threads of energy which contact and draw in the radiant energies which are focused upon it. Thus the psychic body is kept alive and flourishes and grows stronger as she awaits the time for her rebirth. Shortly before the time approaches for the actual moment of conception, she will be taken to the earth plane and placed in contact with the aura of her future mother, which supplies her energy until she enters the womb. At the moment of conception, the radiant energies which enter this umbilical structure, which you cannot see, are actually a form of the superconscious of this girl. Later on in her earth life, after being born, this superconscious will assume a much closer and more personal relationship. However, she may be somewhat of a problem child to her parents. She is quite likely to be ethereally minded and do much daydreaming and seem to have less cohesive relationship to her environment than is normally exhibited. Although the room which you see before you may contain a thousand or more small lives, I can say that this is but one very small part of many similar nurseries, not to mention clinics, hospitals, and rest homes of all kinds which are not only on Venus but on a countless number of similar planets throughout the vast number of universes. I will not attempt, at this time, to give you facts which may pertain to such similar structures and institutionalized centers of therapy which exist in some of the spiritual planes, which you call the higher astral realms. The bodies contained in this room happen to be only the very few which I, my brothers and sisters in this particular household, can help. Someday you will learn, and see a little more clearly, the importance of the law of harmonic relationship that helps to separate and integrate the many spiritual functions which you will find in your various spiritual evolutions. So until the time when I can unfold more of these wonderful and mysterious facts of life, may we rest in peace. Malvar. Chapter 17. Again we come with our love from the planet Venus. I believe we were discussing the topic of self-conclusion and we had been in the ward where you saw a few of those in the suspended state awaiting a new opportunity. So while we are still on this subject of nursing, let us go into another section where we can examine another type of self-destruction, which is a form of partial spiritual suicide. We will re-enter the long corridor and pass over into the large doorway you see just before you, and while we are about to enter, may I say that you are quite likely to be reminded of some large hospital back on your earth plane. There are, of course, no operating rooms where the physical bodies are dismembered and torn apart. Instead, we use our mind forces in directing radiant healing energies, but see, you are in the ward. I see you are very much amazed at the size and large numbers of what looks somewhat like the familiar hospital beds in an earth hospital. But come, let us step closer to one of the nearby beds. Before you is a woman whom we shall call Susan. She passed from the earth life but a few weeks ago, and as you see, you would think her more dead than alive. In contrast to the pure psychic bodies of the suicides, the people in these many hundreds of beds have all retained the semblance of their physical form. This is because in their passing, which was quite normal in most cases, they have retained in a somewhat shell-like fashion the hard thought form energies, the word hard being a relative term. Looking at Susan more closely, you will see she is apparently without life. Of course she does not breathe because she needs no air in her astral form. You will notice also the grayish pallor-like color which makes her appear as if she were almost carved from stone. On Earth Susan was what you might call an ordinary sophisticated worldly woman. She had a business career, she smoked and attended cocktail parties, and she did numerous other things which are associated with the life one might normally find in a large city. She did not have time, however, for periods of meditation. And if she attended church, it was only on special occasions such as at Easter time, where she might show off some new finery, and while in church on those occasions she was not listening to the words of inspiration nor were her eyes used other than in peering about the church to see what the other females were wearing. So the day came for Susan when she must leave her familiar earth life and the livened chauffeurs and penthouses, furs, and jewelry. While she did not willingly do so, her hour struck and she was forced to leave her body behind. Perhaps it was one of the physical conditions like cancer which caused Susan to leave her body, but whatever the cause, one thing is sure, Susan was not ready for her journey into a new world. A world which was entirely unfamiliar and strange, a world in which none of her earth things seemed to give her security and comfort. While there is nothing wrong perhaps with the way Susan lived on the earth except that she devoted too much of her time and concentrated too much of her attention on the superfluous and often unnecessary appurtenances of a highly exploited way of life, because she devoted so much of her time and concentrated so much of her energies into the acquisition of those superfluities, there was no time left to prepare for the future. When a small green caterpillar crawls under a leaf and spins himself into a cocoon, it is because the small still voice tells him to do so. And during the long winter months he will hang in a suspended state until the warm rays of the spring sunshine, then he will burst aside his little prison and will emerge a full-fledged beautiful butterfly. Like caterpillars and all other creeping, flying, crawling things on your earth plane, Susan too had a small still voice, but perhaps she loved more the sound of ice tinkling in a champagne glass, or perhaps the rustle of a new silk dress was much more musical in her ears, and so her time came and she was not prepared. Do you see the little lady coming down the corridor? She is Susan's mother. She has been coming here daily since her daughter was brought here. Susan's mother lived in another age. She was brought up on a farm. She was taught honest toil and the way of life of her kinfolk. But no matter how many cows had to be milked, or chickens fed, or bread to be baked, Susan's mother always found time to steal away in some corner with the family Bible, and there in her quiet moments of meditation she heard the whisper of the still small voice. And so when her hour struck she did not come into her new world unprepared. She did not arrive in a helpless inert state, more dead than alive. Instead she arose from her mortal flesh to her loved ones. She is living there now in a place some of the earth folks call Summerland. As for Susan, it may be several months before she can hear the sound of her mother's voice. Perhaps she will be awakened by the soft touch of her mother's tears upon her face. Meanwhile we here, who attend her and others like her, daily and hourly project into her consciousness the ray of healing and love. We send her strength and wisdom, and while she is being healed she is being taught the consciousness of her new world. She is being shown within her mind the beauty of the world which she almost lost. Yes, we can walk up and down these aisles and look into the faces of countless hundreds which are like Susan. Perhaps it was not the rustle of a new dress which drowned out the small voice. It could have been an alcoholic stupor, or it could have been a thousand other things with loud voices which are always shouting in your earth world. And so, my brothers and sisters who are walking the many pathways of life, in whatever you are doing in those pathways, pause for several moments every hour and listen for the small still voice. Perhaps it has been a long time since you heard it last, and perhaps it will take many efforts before you will hear it again. But it is there nevertheless. It always has been, ever since you were created, and it always will be, for the small voice is the God within you. No, we do not use knives or instruments upon those who are brought here. Only the radiant energy of God's pure love is used to fill the vacant places in their minds and hearts which were left unfilled in their earth lives. These great hospitals, if you can call them such on Venus, have witnessed the scenes of many happy reunions of those who have awakened to the light of their new day, and found the waiting arms of their loved ones. Yes, there are those, fortunately but a few, who do not awaken, nor will they, for in spite of all the love rays that we send them, they have, in their blindness, refused all aid. And so they must wander in the sub-astral blackness of their own minds until the day comes when they shall desire to be freed, and then they shall pray to their God, and He will send them a shaft of light, and like the tiny cocoon they will burst the bonds of their prison, for it is one of their own making, and thus they will emerge into the warm rays of a new-found sun on a warm day in a new springtime, and with their new wings they will float grandly off into the beauty of the spiritual world. About them. Malvar. Chapter 18. Greeting and love to my earth brothers and sisters. In our previous transmission we had begun our exploration of one of the great wards where we, here on Venus, care for and heal some of the earth people who have passed into our worlds in a spiritually incapacitated condition. The importance of this subject cannot be overemphasized. I could devote many years of discussion to this particular concept without repeating myself. Because of its importance, I will continue from the place where we left off. I have pointed out to you a particular example, in the person of Susan. While all of the people who are lying in the many hundreds of beds which you see about you, all left their physical bodies, each in a different way, or rather from a different cause, yet they all had one thing in common. The one necessary and important ingredient in their lives was missing, and that ingredient is spiritual consciousness. I do not mean to imply that these people were willfully sinful. Most of the blame for the wrong which they did to themselves could be placed squarely upon the shoulders of an age and civilization which fostered such spiritual neglect. I might point out that in some cases the parents were largely responsible in not teaching a sufficiently strong spiritual attitude. So their children grew up and drifted into a material way of life. In order to understand more fully what actually happens when a person does not have spiritual consciousness in an earth plane existence, we will first examine the psychic body. I have partially explained this concept in a previous chapter. However, as we have progressed much further into our thought relationship, you will pardon me if I repeat some of this. The psychic body, such as Susan's or your own, is the sum total of all that you are, or all that you have been, in any and all previous spiritual and physical evolutions. For the time being, I am excluding the factor of your soul consciousness, as it will simplify somewhat our discussion. The psychic body, expressing the sum total of all these things and all your experiences, does so in one way. Each thought, each action, becomes a part of the psychic body as a tiny conglomerate mass of waveforms of pure spiritual energy. It is not like your earth electricity, inasmuch as it lives and is a part of a higher dimension. It is not dissipated by the time factor. Now you may wonder how a man progresses. Let me say first, however, that this psychic body is not usually some shapeless form or mass of energy as might be supposed, but rather assumes the same form and proportions as your physical body. This is because you have a strong sense of personal consciousness. I believe your earth scientist calls this the ego. Actually, as far as the psychic body is concerned, it is simply the outer shell-like covering, composed of energies which are coarser and harder because they are physical in origin. In the case of a violent murder, or where a person is very suddenly precipitated under duress into an astral world, he may be actually blown out of his hard shell-like covering, like a pea popped out of a pod. It is this shell-like covering which I call the thought form body, and its associations and origins in the physical world will form a ghost or apparition which may haunt its familiar or material environment. That is why it is so difficult to salvage such astral forms, as they lack the adhesive quality. This also is exactly what happens to a large degree in a suicide, but with this difference. The act of self-conclusion is one in which the person destroys his own thought form body by a strong act of will, which is necessary before he can go against the natural instincts of self-preservation. Thus you saw the residual remains of the psychic bodies of the suicides. Later on we will see other places where there are others who have lost their thought form bodies, or envelopes, in different ways. In this particular ward, as with Susan, these are the more normal cases. Now I will get into the explanation of the construction of the psychic body. Connecting up our thoughts again, we will see, under powerful observation, that these millions of tiny masses of waveforms appear to be in many sizes and shapes. They also reflect an infinite variety of patterns. Roughly speaking, we can divide these waveforms into two groups: those which were fashioned out of negative conditions, and those which were fashioned with positive conditions. They actually exist in two different realms or dimensions. The more extreme negative conditions may live through several spiritual and physical evolutions, while the weaker ones gradually fade and are replaced by others. Likewise do the weaker positive conditions. In both cases, however, we must assume that the person is progressing upward in his evolution. In the case then, of both positive and negative waveforms, the gradual fading and replacing will be done with stronger and stronger, or shall I say more spiritual, expressions. Unfortunately, however, these strong negative experiences sometimes seem to form a core or nucleus which gathers about it other negative forms which will reflect, as some diseased condition, into the mind or physical body of the individual. This diseased condition can occur or manifest thousands of years after the original negation was incurred. Spiritual healing, in its true sense, means that a strong added outside mind force which is reflected into the psychic body, when combined with or added to the stronger or more positive wave forms of this psychic body, will rectify six or erase these hard negative cores. For the benefit of you Earth people, your strongest and most powerful positive energies contained in your psychic body are formed in your meditative periods when you become consciously aware of God and the great creative universe. And let your periods of meditation and contemplation be done, not in a tearful attitude of supplication which is sometimes called prayer, but do these things with the positive powerful assurance that you can see and sense the all-pervading wisdom and intellect reflected in all things about you. This positiveness is called faith in your earth words, and is the greatest instrument which you possess to aid you in your many flights in your countless evolutions into eternity. You can see now how it is possible to achieve spiritual progression by the constant rectification and the removal of wave forms in your psychic body, and do not forget that they must be replaced by the positive thought wave forms which are your acts of kindness and love, your feeling of spiritual affinity with God, your impersonal attitudes toward your fellow man. For you cannot give selflessly nor can you receive your greatest blessings in self-consciousness. Remember also that your psychic body is you. Your psychic body is the vessel or body which contains, or is linked to, the great fountainhead which you call God. Malvar. Chapter 19. I would like to continue, if I may, with another discussion which is very closely related to the nature of things which were previously discussed, that of astral worlds. Every person on the pathway would like to know where they are going when they leave the earth plane, and that is only a natural attitude which is born out of the desire for security. Therefore, a greater degree of faith could be expressed in each individual if he knew something of the place where he is going, when he leaves this physical body. You earth people have numerous rather vague ideas and explanations of these places. You may call them astral worlds, summerlands, or even heaven and hell or purgatory. Other people have some vague idea that an astral world is something like a big shelf or flat place floating out there in space somewhere. If you remember, your history books tell you that a few hundred years ago people believed the earth was a large flat place which was pushed around the sun by an angel, and that if you sailed a ship a little too far you would fall off of the edge. Of course, such ideas are very infantile, likewise are many of the ideas of the Earthman in regard to the dimensions which he calls astral worlds. Referring back to our original concept of energy and mass, mass is purely a product of energy reflected from a higher dimension, and that by changing the relationship of mass to its energy source would also change its apparent density or solidity. And with this change in density there are also other changes which automatically take place. Mass will reflect or refract light frequency in a different relationship. Such a mass will also be more or less affected by other factors, such as time and space. This was what your scientist Einstein tried to explain in his fourth dimensional hypotheses. It may surprise you and your Earth scientists to know that there are other planets in this solar system that you cannot see. This is so simply because their relationship as matter or mass to their energy source is such that it makes them non-reactive to any of your physical senses. You cannot see, hear, or smell, or otherwise feel such a mass or energy in any energy relationship other than your own unless you are mediumistic or clairvoyant. I need not mention that this is the basis for what is called materialization, in which a quantity or mass is temporarily changed in its relationship to its energy source, into your own relationship, and thus temporarily your senses will be reactive to it. It must, however, revert back to its original relationship. Our planet Venus occupies such an energy relationship with the outwardly expressed mass of the planet that it is much more spiritual in nature, or shall I say more highly evolved, yet it still retains some of the qualities which make it reactive to your sense of sight. Your astronomer with his telescope sees it as a beautiful globe-shaped mass of cloud-like formations. He has never seen the surface of our planet. He believes it to be slightly smaller than his own Earth, but this is not so. Because of the spiritual nature of the cloud-like masses which he sees, he has been unable to accurately determine the true size. This, of course, is of no particular consequence, except that it can be a strong point of argument with the many earth minds. If your astronomer could construct a telescope with which he could see clairvoyantly into the universe about him, he would see innumerable planets revolving in their orbits, which he does not know are there, nor will he ever know in his present earthly consciousness. There are such invisible planets in our own solar system that revolve around our own sun and use its energies, which are, as I have said, energies which reside in another frequency dimension. With a moment's thought, you will see that when a person passes, in a normal or more highly developed spiritual consciousness, he will automatically be attracted to the particular one of these invisible planets which is most suitable for his present stage of evolution. When he arrives there, he will not, as some people suppose, float on a pink cloud or play a harp, nor do as described in any of the other foolishly contrived notions. He, as a more strongly developed person, will want to go right on living. He has, in a subconscious way, a strong thought pattern of previous lives and associations which are reflected into his conscious mind from the tiny wave forms which form his psychic body. He therefore will pick up the tools of his trade, shall we say, at the place where he left off on the earth in the earth consciousness, and continue on from there. All this is done, however, with a much more highly advanced mental and spiritual perception. Actually, he is learning, through these countless evolutions, the ultimate way of life. Gradually he will lose the thought associations which were born in the lower, more physical life, which made it necessary, according to his concept, to express himself in physical ways. In his more advanced, spiritual evolution, he will form new thought patterns which associate him more strongly with the infinite spiritual nature which comes from the fountainhead, and these expressions do not associate themselves with a physical form, such as moving the arms and legs, or in speech, or sight, or hearing. Instead, his mind will be occupied in expressing itself in a more universal nature. While he does not need clothing in the generally accepted way, he could, if he so desired, quickly construct any such clothing by directing energy through his mind. His universal sense of perception will supplant that of the five senses of his physical earth life. He will be able to perceive and conceive, instantaneously and simultaneously, countless numbers of dimensions. However, this is beyond conception in your present earth plane existence. I am trying to avoid any advanced abstract evaluations. I know the limitations of the world about you and of the thought patterns which are formed by living in such a world. In case there are some points in this last discussion which are not quite clear, I will explain them more fully in our next visit. So let us rest a while in peace. Malvar. Chapter XX. Now that we have rested, let us again resume our quest into the infinities of man's evolution. In our previous discussion, we had emerged into something of the more abstract relationships. We had also gained some further insight into not only the development of man himself in his evolution, but also into some of the new worlds in which he would someday find himself. As the Avatar Christ spoke, "In my Father's house are many mansions." So we have now found out that those mansions are not pink clouds, neither are we buried in some tomb to remain until some such future day of liberation. In short, the more normal and natural sequence in man's many evolutions is such that he will at no time assume fantastic and irrelevant relationships with the highly ordained and conceived principles of the cosmic mind in any unnatural sequence in his evolution. He may impose upon himself certain restricted or destructive elements in his life and so express a retrograde concept of his evolution. Generally speaking, however, we may assume that if a man is a mason or a tailor in this life, he will find himself in his newly born and more spiritual condition on a planet which also expresses a higher degree of spiritual value. He will pick up and continue much in the fashion of where he left off. This is because, as I have told you, his whole true nature of personal expression is contained in his psychic body. To precipitate him into some high heavenly state where all things were unrelated to his concept of things and of what he is, would make him very distressed and unhappy. At some other time I will discuss more fully the more retrograde factors which sometimes enter into an individual's life. To you earth parents may I say, you do not create a child, a mother grows a body in her womb. In the science of genetics it is supposed that all of the characteristics of the newborn infant are contained in the chromosomatic structures, but this is only partially true. A child may, through such a process, borrow or assume certain physical characteristics of the parents, but he does not in any sense borrow any of the spiritual. The spiritual factors are contained in the psychic body, and in its relationship to the superconsciousness. You mothers, or mothers-to-be, are only the instruments in the progression of some individual. Your son or daughter is not the product of this generation, but has quite likely come through many such physical channels before arriving in your household. He may be even such an advanced soul that he may have chosen your particular household as best suited to his earth needs. Generally speaking, however, this is the exception rather than the rule. A proper evaluation of earth conditions from some psychic domain in which the person may be traveling is almost impossible. He usually gravitates or is attracted to some particular household in a manner of frequency relationship. It is something like this: he may feel your vibration and the association of the many vibrations around you. In remembering that your child came from some other world or dimension, you must also assume that there are numbers of these, and while some of them may relate very strongly to your earth world, yet beyond this, he may have lived in other worlds which were not so related. If you remember our talk on concept, and that it is valuable only in a relative sense, as far as your physical world is concerned. In the abstract sense, abstract in your way of thinking does not exist. You have related all things about you and evaluated them according to time, space and other related factors which deal with your own personal experiences. Thus you have created a world for yourself which is limited and finite. In the abstract, such limitation does not exist, as concept can perceive all things, instantaneously. Of course, let me say here, only God is the absolute abstract. And as far as I know, none of us has achieved such perfection. Getting back to the child and his relationship to you, you must, as I say, remember that he is a product, in a spiritual way, of many incarnations, and that he could have arrived in your home from some other dimension to which the present factors are entirely unrelated. The many science fiction magazines that have been published, and the many stories contained therein, may seem fantastic as they are entirely unrelated to your world, and while they were all conceived as fiction, you may be surprised to learn how factual many of them are. All in all, they may be said to be an outward symptom of the inward self, of man's desire to free himself from the obsessive structure of material life. I do not mean to infer that your child which has come to you through this process of evolution has been some fish or frog, or some many-horned monster which is often depicted in some of these stories, but only that man always assumes a relative form of body which will function best in the environment in which he lives. On your earth there has been a ceaseless struggle in mankind to orientate himself into a philosophy of life which would adequately separate the true spiritual factors of spiritual evolution from the seemingly scientifically supported factors of material evolution. Man's physical body is only the product of physical evolution which was conceived in infinite mind as a vehicle in which he could best function on your planet, but it must be in no wise misconstrued or mixed with the spiritual concept. The only factors of relationships which exist are the preconceived associations which are born out of the experience of physical life upon some material planet. This discourse, I hope, will begin your spiritual evolution toward your ultimate goal. For the one objective which evolves from your whole or countless evolutions resolves itself in a personal struggle of each individual to return to the fountainhead which has created and conceived him, and thus in his proper relationship man becomes an infinitely activated participant in the universal creation. I will return soon. Malvar.